welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Paddy, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Thank you. I couldn't believe when we have guests back on, it's always the way, but this is ridiculously longer than I thought it'd been. I haven't spoke to you, I think since 2020, like on the podcast at least. So it's been a good few years.
It's been a while, mate. And actually, I don't know if I even knew what a podcast was really before before your podcast. And I did a couple of others a while ago. They seemed to be quite hot and people wanted to talk about football. And now I'm into them all the time. I listen to yours. I listen to the Joe Rogan podcast a lot. Get my science, bro science route, they call it off of that. But good, mate, good. I'm glad to be back on. I know your podcast is very popular, so I'm honoured to be invited back on. I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, it survived. I mean, I'm thinking back in 2020. I think I knew what I was doing with podcasts either, to be fair. I'm not sure I'm much better now, but we were definitely making hard work that we needed to. But it's great to have you back on, mate. And I will say this, it's one of our most listened to podcasts. Usually the first few always are, because people jump on episode one and listen to a couple and either get bored or stick with it. But I think yours is like episode 39, and it's still one of the most downloaded ones. It's certainly in our, probably, I think, our top five. So I think, you know, not just obviously yourself, but the topic itself, obviously engaged with people and has kept engaging, which shows you how topical it was back then, and it's still getting traction now. So I'm looking forward to kind of revisiting some of that stuff. I know we're going to build on things from that, but certainly revisiting some of that stuff. But I guess most importantly, mate, if it's been a good 4 or 5 years now, what have you been up to?
Yeah, well, it's good to hear about that podcast being popular, and I think you're right, mate. It's probably not anything you or I necessarily do. It's the topic, right? It's football over the world is it's getting bigger in terms of coaching. People are just more into coaching. I don't know that the game itself is any more popular, but you know, it's trendy now to be coaches. People understand it's a living you can make depending on where you live, and there's a pathway and a journey, and I can learn more about it, and you know, I don't have to make it up on the weekend on the fly. I can buy these books and buy these educational things and watch videos on YouTube, and I can go to seminars and learn to be better. And then you find out, there's this thing called positional play, or there's this thing called relationism, or there's this whatever it is, and you attach yourself to something, I guess. Then you go looking for the podcasts and the materials that support that, right? But so it's good to hear that people are still into it and cracking on with that. Since I spoke to you last, mate, yeah, a few things. All good, family well. I'm working as a director of coaching, which I love. It's less admin, right? It's more football and dealing with people, which is why I got into coaching in the first place. Out in Texas, I'll give those guys a shout out. It's called Gulf Coast Soccer Club. It's in just near Houston, and I've been brought in there to essentially put my money where my mouth is and do what I talk about and what I write about, which is putting together a game model. Working with the coaches on coach education, designing curriculum, syllabus, working the concepts into these, and then sort of coalescing all of that, bringing it together and trying to help these great and dedicated coaches improve the training environment and playing environment for the players in their care, right? The young players in their care. So probably quite a lot of things have gone on since then, but that's where I am now. I'm also now on the other side of this as a parent. My son Charlie is 9, and he's turned out to be quite a handy young player, and he's a great young man. And the absolute joy highlight of my week is watching this boy run around and dominate on a Saturday, mate. And now I understand all the nightmares and the headaches that parents cause to coaches, because I'm doing it myself. Ashamedly, but I haven't been thrown out of a game here or anything, but not too far off on occasion. You know? No, mate, to be honest with you, life went through a few changes after I spoke to you, and things are on the up and up now. I'm back on the field a lot, and you forget. So I was a lawyer by profession. I don't know if we ever talked about that, mate, before I moved over to America, and I owned an insurance company at one point, and I was in the sort of professional arena. And coming over to America, because these clubs and mega clubs and super clubs, they have all these kind of levels of management that I don't know that you necessarily have back home. And they're paid positions, so they're full-time positions, and you can kind of fall out of love with the game because you can find yourself being further and further removed from the field. And from people, right? You're just dealing with angry parents and, you know, people that want refunds. And that's not really my thing. So this director of coaching role, as opposed to an executive director role, is more hands-on, and I'm coaching the coaches. And then also I'm still on the field. I jump in, and if I see something not going 100% the way I think it should, I'll go, why don't you let me coach this? And I'm jumping in, I'm coaching the rondos again, I'm coaching the positional play games, and I'm loving it, mate. So everything's good at the moment.
You found your happy space.
Back in the happy space.
Yeah, good, good. Well, brilliant. Well, you deserve it. Fantastic. Well, the
Thank
problem
you,
with you,
mate.
Paddy, is you can talk for 30 seconds, and then I've got about 40 different things I want to ask you. Like, this the Faces
Mate, have
podcast
at
is going to be like 4 hours long. But
it.
I'll try and do a few. Well, I think the thing about the original podcast that you did and what we're going to cover again now, I think it is like you throw out these phrases because you're embedded in this and it's part of your life. But positional play and game models and rondos and all these things that I think when you do get into coaching at first, you're worried about where you're going to put your cones and how many kids are going to turn up and if you've got an odd number, how you're going to survive with that. And then once you get past that kind of first year of kind of finding your feet a little bit, you start hearing these terms and you want to know more about them. And the beautiful thing about what you do, I think, is you take terms that, I think are probably things that are discussed at, top professional clubs across the world, as well as, an under nines grassroots team on a Sunday. Because actually knowing how a rondo works is probably as important to little Billy on the local school team as it is maybe to someone who's playing at Barcelona, because, they're concepts that are kind of universal. And I think that's probably why, the topics that you speak about and why they do engage with people is because if they have that kind of that ability to cover across the whole of the football spectrum. Do you think that's fair to say? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth there, but I'm just trying to work out why we do get so much feedback from your podcast and what you say so much, and the stuff you cover seems to go out so far and reach so far. Do you think that's partly the reason?
I think that's fair to say, Scott. I'd also say that language, having a common language, helps people connect the dots. Whereas you and I, so I mean, we're both English, but let's say I was American and you're living in London and I'm living in Texas and we're talking about the same thing, but we don't know it, right? Because they do have different words for things here, mate. They really do. And I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I would hazard a guess that America has probably the second or third largest amount of youth players in the world. On the neighborhood where I lived before, there was three streets. When I used to run a club in Ohio, and there was three streets that kind of connected into a cul-de-sac sort of thing. And there's about 14 players I remember counted at one point that all played for this club, and there's only probably about 25 houses. So really, mate, and that's an anecdote, right? That's not statistically accurate or anything, but it's much more prevalent than baseball, American football, and basketball as a actual outside of school participation sport, right? So you've got tons of coaches here trying to find their way, and the way that it might be different from Spain to England, it's different here from Texas to Ohio, right? It's the same distance, probably more actually. So when you kind of bring things together under a common language, I think what you do is you give people who are maybe struggling, they were kind of swimming around looking for something to hang on to, you give them that little common reference point, and they can take that and they can start to connect the dots a little bit. Whereas if everyone's speaking a different language, I think it's hard, and you don't even know that you're talking about the same thing, or you don't even know that you're right because you can't get any validation from left or right of you because they're talking about the same thing but in different language. So I like to bring that together. Even in my club, we had a coach education meeting last night, and great, I won't say his name, right, to embarrass him, but a great coach is running a great session. But at the end of it, he asked me point blank for feedback, which I loved, right? He put himself right on the spot. Put himself on the spot, sorry. And I said, just tighten up your language and make sure that you're using the club language so that everyone, all of your parents that are watching, right, can go home and say to their son, oh, coach XYZ was telling you to do this today. All the players know what he's saying, and all the coaches around him know what he's saying, and he knows what he's saying, and I know what he's saying. And that way, there's less mistakes, there's less margin for error. So I think when you have something like positional play, which has less generic and more specific concepts within it, I think that narrowing of what is like an infinitely complex, infinite amount of information, and boiling it down to maybe 25 points that you can put a name on and learn and reference and talk to a colleague about, or another coach about, hey, how your player's dismarking to rupture in their, blah, 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 rather than just this woolly, fluffy language. I think it helps people feel more confident. They can step into a session and use those terms, and then they can actually sit down and learn it. They can go, right, dismarking, I want to read around that topic as well. It's a phrase. Now I know what I can search for. I've got the search term. So no, I think your question is really valid, mate. And I do. I think it allows people to hang on to something solid rather than abstract.
And I guess the point there is it's about that clarity of understanding, right? Because I think you're spot on there, but I think what you do is you help people understand. Like, so they don't necessarily got to agree, but they understand what you mean. Like, so we're talking about Rondo. I've heard people say Rondos are the best thing in the world, and people are saying they don't, and they're useless. And then they could be neither. If you don't understand what they actually are, then you can't really make an informed decision about, how you might use them and how effective they could be. And I guess having
That's
that
right.
common language and talking about, then then you at least get the understanding right, and you can make an informed decision, which is the important bit. About where you go with it. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. And
All right.
if on your point about rondos being good or bad, I was in another session 2 days ago. Again, a great coach, lovely young lady coach, and she was coaching all the right things to her girls, but this rondo is actually probably more of a possession game, just wasn't flowing. Because they didn't, she was speaking, although she was saying the right things, if you drilled down underneath what she was saying, she wasn't using any sort of common language headers. So in the game, over the top of it, when she's coaching, the players weren't really picking up what she was throwing down. And the players were capable, the coach was very capable. So I went in and I was like, right, what is she trying to coach here? She's basically trying to coach scanning, circulating the ball to attract pressure, and pretty. Appearing in pockets of space to receive. So we went in and we put the three names on that, right? We scanning, circulate to attract, and within 5 minutes, right? And I modeled it, right? Within about 5 minutes, the set game is now flying, and you can see the coach is very happy, the kid's very happy. Now that coach knew what she was doing. She just didn't know how to communicate two very concise ideas in split second so that the players picked it up. So it benefits the players on top of everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, great example. Well, thanks, Paddy. Well, I want to get on to the real meeting of the podcast in a bit, but two more quick questions. One about Charlie, but before we get to Charlie, just about directive coaching. So I'm fascinated to know, like, because that sounds like an amazing. When I hear that title, I think it sounds brilliant, and I'm sure it's got its challenges. Of course, we're and different clubs in that role have different challenges. But where do you start, Paddy? Then do you start with a philosophy first? Do you start with right the actual end product? What I know the detail. What and the first team to play 11 aside, or do you start with what you inherit from the club and actually you've got to build around that, or do you start with the players that you've got, or where do you actually start as director of coaching with regards to kind of how you want the teams to play in, and how much that does that go across from the whole kind of all the ages and stages that you've got there?
Mate, that is a massive question. Honestly, we could sit and talk about 2 hours on that. All of the
Sorry,
above,
dude.
basically, Scott. No, great question, mate. Love it. Let's go in for it. But all of the above. So, game models, right? I don't like shoving game models down people's throats, but for me, it's like my starting point because all my sessions come from that. Everything I coach comes from that. How we play comes from that. But game models are probably built on things like culture, history, geography, demographics, how many players you have in the club. Do you have just boys, just girls? Do you have U5s through to U19s? Do all your coaches speak English? Right? Not here, they don't, right? Houston is, I mean, I would estimate our club is at least 50% Hispanic, at least. What are your players capable of? Like, are you walking into an MLS next level academy, or are you walking into a club that has their base in recreational and then into travel, or what they call travel here, which is probably that middle level before, you know, after recreational, but before going on to play in an academy setup. And then you have to kind of coalesce all of these things, bring them together. What are your coaches like? How experienced are your coaches? Can they pick up what you're putting down? So I wouldn't say I had a full start here, but I came in with a preconceived idea and it wasn't quite going the way I wanted it to. So I had to take a few months to sort of step back and I let everything carry on as it was and I tried to help them the best I could. But I had to kind of take a step back and reevaluate and redesign the game models and the sessions and rethink how I communicated it to them. And that's actually where it's very hard, Scott. Although the coaches are paid, no one at this club, not many people in travel soccer at all do it for the money. It's more a labor of love. It's a commitment to the players and the youth in their community, right? And our coaches are no different. They could all make 10 times the amount of money if they put the hours that they put into coaching into their work, right? Or into being an entrepreneur or something. So they do it because they're really good people. So the idea of pulling people in on a night off for coaching education, I didn't know would fly down here because I have been, mate, I was at Red Bulls when I first moved to America, right? An MLS club, professional club, you still have people that would moan and complain about, oh, I've got to get up early and come into this, coach education. You're like, really? Like, what? Why are you here then? Like, because you're not making £1 million a year at this job. You could do something else. So I was really chuffed, really happy to find that actually the coaches in Gulf Coast Soccer Club they embraced coach education and they wanted more of it actually, and they wanted to be put on the spot. So I've never really been one for putting people on the spot in front of everyone. My coach education sessions, typically I'll deliver stuff, but then I'll go and coach a session and I might say, do you want to jump in or whatever, but if you don't, you don't. I had a couple of them come to us and say, can we do it like the federation licenses are? Can we go out and coach and we get feedback? And I was like, yes,
Brilliant.
yes, we can. 100% we can. And that's what we did last night. So you do have to kind of take it as you find it. You can't come in with this preconceived idea of a game model, although I understand that if you get hired and you start quickly after that, well, then you probably bring what you have. But then you do have to, like all good coaches, Scott, you have to go back and adapt, reassess, reevaluate. Maybe you go again, and maybe that cycle never ends, right? But what's quite difficult as well is what adds a layer of complexity to that is I took the decision to do four game models, and I'm like, oh, why did I do that? But it was the 5v5, yeah, the 7v7, the 9v9, and the 11v11 because in previous clubs where maybe I was working in a professional environment, the coaches would understand the 11v11 model and just be able to apply it to their own teams. Here, we've got some coaches that maybe it's their first go around. Maybe they've not worked in a professional environment. Maybe they've been coaching for a long time, but maybe they're coaching recreational. So they need the game model tailored towards their specific age group. So that took, I mean, that took months and months and months to put together. But no, mate. Yeah, it's based on everything you find, and I think it's a constantly evolving and adapting situation.
Well, I didn't want to. This comes to head just now, but let's not get too involved in the Premier League and that stuff because it's a slightly different world. But obviously, when I look at Man United and obviously I'm not a Man United fan, but I just wonder if you're wedded too much to if that's an example of someone where if you're wedded too much to one thing and don't want to adapt, whether or not you kind of leave yourself vulnerable. Obviously, in your position, like you've got to not think about one team; it's about running that something across a whole club, haven't you? So, you've got to be even, I guess, you've got to be more adaptable and more flexible without probably moving away from your principles and kind of what you believe, football, could and should be. But still recognizing actually you've got to play the hand you're dealt, right? And every club's a bit different with the cards that fall into your lap in that position.
That's right.
So with the sevens, obviously, when you said about writing four game models, I've spent the last 4 years trying to write one, and I've got a lot of to go on that one still. Also trying to write four just to get some work. But I'm guessing there I'm going to guess here, you have core themes. And if you look at the 11 aside your game model there, I'm guessing that what you're trying to do is just unpick that and tailor it back to five aside. Is that how you would do it? I mean, it's not going to be the principles, I guess, are going to be, consistent are they in certain elements to it? So you're kind of layering up as you work up through the through the stages. Is that what you've done, or have you got literally got four different ones depending on the format you're playing?
Similar to that, mate. Rather than layering up, I'm actually layering back from the 11v11 one. So that the one that
Getcha.
is closest, that most respects the real game, the wholeness of the entire 11v11 one. That's the starting point. And then what I do, exact opposite. So what you were saying was right, but just the other direction. I then go. I go back and go, well, when you're doing a 5v5 one. Not that my game model, I'll just give you an example. Not that my game model actually has crossing and finishing in from wide. That's not something I believe in, right? But if it did, well, in the US, you're not even allowed to head the ball until I think you're 12. So that would be something that would be stripped out right away. I have phases of the game. I have zone one, zone two, zone three, zone four. On a 5v5 field, you might say there's really only two zones. It's our half or their half because it's so small. And little kids, they're not going to distinguish between an entry zone and a finishing zone. When they get over halfway, they're trying to shoot and score and all that thing. So you kind of strip that back. And then that kind of principle works its way through the 9v9 and the 7v7 as well, mate. Some stuff just is not relevant, or even if it's relevant, it might not be appropriate. It might not be something that these kids need to work on. So funny you said this. I was actually chatting with a guy that works at the club. He's our academy director. Talk about this yesterday. And I'm actually in the process of, again, I'm about to start it. I'm going to give myself a few days to get over last night because it was a lot of mental energy and nervous energy to put together the coaching education session. But I'm going to redesign our 7v7 and 5v5 game models. We have a four-part session plan across the club. So we start with, well, let me break it down. So do you know, is Curva popular in the UK? I forget.
We know it's been around for a while.
It
Yeah, I think
is.
most people are familiar with that.
It is. Yeah. So we are an exclusive partner club of Curva in Texas. So we have on Mondays all our young kids, so U5 through to U10, come in and they do an hour and a half of Curva, and it goes from like individual skills through to probably the most we're doing like a 3v2 attacking game, right? Lovely, brilliant, helps them get their technical stuff. That's covered.
Me and my ball
Obviously,
stuff.
you and I know. Me and my ball, and we do go a little bit past that. So we do all the TikTok, but now we're looking, if you're interested, mate, as well, if any of the listeners are interested, there's a place in Dallas called Forms, FORMS Academy. And they might be, it's like these guys are from a different planet. You look what they've got their 6 and 7 year olds doing technically. I can't get my head around it. So I'm trying to reach out to them at the moment to ask them how I can supplement Curva with whatever they're doing. But what we're trying to do, Scott, basically is generate technically excellent players. Then you do get your, and a lot of coaches, well, we need passing and receiving as well. I was like, well, mate, that's what a rondo and a positional game is, right? At its core, right? So if they can't do that, don't worry about anything else. But then, so we have this, so Mondays we have this standalone Curva. That's all it is. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, whenever these boys and girls come in, they then have a four-part session plan they're presented with. They get a rondo, they get a positional game, they then get what we call a preferential situational simulation that's adapted from the Spanish, or a PSS, and then a
Preferential, what was that
training
again,
game.
Paddy? Preferential.
Yeah, situational simulation. And
Okay,
basically,
brilliant.
what you're doing in there, Scott, the closest thing that you probably have in the English language, that would be like a phase of play where you're
Getcha.
really trying to get a particular element of your game model to repeat itself with high frequency. So it's a non-continuous game, right? It's not end to end to end. There will be a start point and a stop point so that you can work on the focus team. And if you're building out the back and you're trying to get the centre back to dribble, then maybe the boys are doing that, and when the attacking team win it, they've only got 5 seconds to score. And if they don't, or if they do, the ball goes straight back to the opposition goalkeeper and they rebuild again, right?
Makes
And then we've
sense.
got the training game at the end, which we call it a coached game, Scott. And it's not a chance to sit back and scrimmage. It's now we're embedding these principles even more, but in the game itself.
Love it.
I don't know that our boys and girls at the younger age groups in the academy get as much out of that PSS phase of the session plan as I want them to. I think asking a coach to set up four activities in an hour and a half might be too much, right? If they're a junior coach or a younger coach. And also on top of all of that, you have got to manage behaviors of kids at that age. And as soon as a coach turns his back a little bit, they can start acting out a little bit. So I'm in the process now, and I was chatting to our director of academy, right? So him and I are the people that would make those decisions. I think we both came to the conclusion that we might just do three parts in that session, rondo, positional play, training game, or at the very most, we might start with a technical Kerver-esque warm-up and then go rondo, positional play, training game.
Training game.
So I hope that wasn't too much of a long-winded answer, Scott, but to your question about do I come in pre-prepared with a game model or whatever, yes and no. So yes, but then be prepared to evaluate and adapt it and redesign it at all times.
Paddy, it's really interesting because that a phenomenal answer, by the way. Again, you've uncovered like a 50 different things we could speak about. On the four-part training plan, you see, from my perspective looking at that, I would have said that the third part was, oh, that's the bit of rule. The coaching's kind of taking place, the most important bit.
Yes.
That shows, it's like, it shows my ignorance. It shows you that that's where I'm at and that I need to get better. And I totally get what you're saying now, but I'd be like, well, that's the coaching bit. That's what I've got to get right. The other stuff's quite nice and whatever else. That's the fluff around it, but that's where I'm going to do much of coach. That's where I want to see kind of transfer on a pitch. But actually, you're saying, you know, we almost, if it's not done right, you can afford to lose that bit because actually the other three are so important and work so well that, you know, we can get one out of doing those things really well.
So I think you're right, mate. That so and again, mate, this is like you were here last night. We had this coach education.
I should have.
Meeting.
I need to be there last night. That's what it's really showing, isn't it? You're being polite.
I think we no, mate. No, you're bringing up points that we all brought up, and that's my point. Right? It's not. I'm making a decision based on what I feel and what I see, but what we were saying last night is, and sorry, I should say that stripping back of that third part is only for probably the 5v5 and maybe the first year of 77.
The younger age groups, absolutely, yeah.
The very youngest, but you're right, mate. That is one of the things that I was embedding last night is that parts three and four, because they look more like a game, sometimes it's a cue for the coaches to relax a bit because they've just worked their backsides off getting these kids for an hour or 45 minutes to try and do a rondo in a positional game, which might have been tough for them. It's human nature to when you get an opportunity to put your feet up a little bit and sit back because the kids can play a game, they can manage a game on their own, is to do that. But actually, yeah, what we were saying is no, double down now. Now is your time to come and do your principles. So you wouldn't know this, Scott, because it's different across all clubs. But what we do is the first two parts of this four-part session are concepts only. So it's universal concepts and it's collective concepts. So universal being like scanning, back foot receiving, a first, a second, or a third line pass. Collective concepts being find the free man, play with a third man, circulating the ball, switching the ball. These are collective concepts. So the rondo will be universal concepts only. Positional game will be collective concepts, plus maybe you would train, you know, still scanning in that, right? Which is a universal concept. You can still put that in the second part. The third and fourth parts are our game model principles. So that's the tactical. So you might say that parts one and two are tactical. What they used to say, tech-tac. Remember that saying? Tech-tac?
Yep.
The last two are just tactical. So you're not training concepts or anything in that. And what came up last night was, and these brave coaches that put themselves out there to be evaluated last night was, they were trying to coach a little bit of everything across all four parts.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, no, let's focus. Let's get the kids. Let's get them to instill XYZ as a habit. Scanning is a habit in rondos and positional games. Let's get circulating and probing in there as a habit and understanding why they do it. And let's make that second nature in the second part.
Yeah.
Then let's work on the tactical stuff. And what I'm saying is, Scott, and I'm not sure I'm right, is that at 5v5, I think the tactical stuff could be much more generic and maybe just coached in the training game at the end and maybe just work on the building blocks of being a football player in parts one and two. And I'm not saying I'm 100% right on that because, you know, you look around the world and not everyone does the same thing. But at this club, with this staff, with this level of play, with this, you know, XYZ, I think that might be the thing to do. And I think you might get happier 5v5 players and coaches, and then you've prepared them at 77 to then take on this extra tactical load.
Absolutely. I guess there you can think about more about your principles, can't you? Like the general stuff you want to be doing as, you know, as a team rather than the technical detail around it. And I would imagine, again, this is where It's fascinating to look at this because I think, and I'm not this by the way, but if I was a great coach and you're watching my session and you didn't see the third part here, if you kept it in, if I was really, really good, you should be able to work out what I'm trying to get across from the players from part one, part two, and certainly for obviously from part four, shouldn't you? Because like
You
I should
should.
be able to embed those principles and stuff. I can see what's going to work on it. I can see what's coming because he's really focusing on X, Y, and Z with regards to the concepts. So I'm thinking that it's leading us down this path here for this particular session. We're actually, and I think maybe not as good as coach, well, I'd put myself potentially is, you probably wouldn't get that, but maybe in the part three, now, oh, I get what Scott's trying to do now. Because the part three is obviously quite clear and evident because the practices set up there is clear what he's trying to get out of that. But unless, if you could do more of that in one, two, and four, unless you need a three, well, the more enjoyable it is for the players, I would imagine. The more fun it is to coach, and probably the cleverer a coach you are because you're embedding some of these things now in slightly more game-related ways, but also allowing for the individual stuff as well and the concepts to get put in there without needing maybe more of a functional or a phase of play practice, which work really well, don't they? But if you just lean on the functional play practice, I think that's when you get coaches saying, "Nice, no, why isn't it working for us on a Saturday or a Sunday that we're on our matches? What? Why we did this really well at training the other day, and now we can't do it?" It's like, well, actually, you're not doing parts one, two, and four as like you need to do them. Part three isn't getting where you need to get to.
I think you're right, mate. And like you said, you should be able to identify that. And if you look at our training plans, training sessions, not every so parts one and two, the stuff that you learn, they're like the building blocks of football. Like I honestly, and I mean this wholeheartedly, not just because I'm invested in it, but because over the last 15 years, I've worked in the game and I've done deep dives and I've put myself about as much as I could in other environments to see what people do. And I think you will find it very hard to develop any kind of meaningful player or meaningful play as well if you don't have the building blocks of scanning, be able to receive the ball on your back foot. And one of our concepts as well, Scott, is what we call outplaying the opposition. And that might be dribbling, running with the ball, cutting, turning, all these kind of things. If you don't have the ability to switch play, if you don't have the ability to hold the ball under pressure, maybe you and a buddy and pull a couple of defenders in, you're not ever going to develop football. So having said that, although these things are standalone, I do try my very hardest to work backwards from the macro principle that we want in parts three and four and say what concepts support or complement these. So for
Absolutely.
example, last night the coaches that were coaching, they were coaching this macro principle. The macro principle is, mate, I'll send you all of this if you're interested, Scott. It was
Absolutely.
in, of course, mate, no problem. It was the build-out zone, right? What we call zone one, initiation of play. And it was find the free man in a defensive line to carry the ball into space two. And space two is an area we identify behind the front line of pressure. We want to get into that with the ball. Find the
Yep.
free man to carry. So the concepts that we would work on were scanning, because obviously you need to know where the free man is.
Yep.
Circulating the ball to attract pressure, right? So to get that press to go to one side of the play, put a field, switch play to find the free man. So those are the three concepts we worked on. Sorry, and the fourth one is running with the ball. So you've got literally all the things that we worked on in the macro principle, almost the smaller components of them were taught across the Rondo and then the positional play game. So although they're not tactical, they're what I would maybe refer to as tech tack. I haven't got a better phrase than that. And
It
they,
works.
right? It works,
Yeah.
and they move through. As you move through the four-part session, you strip away the tech, and it becomes more tack, right? Now you can't do that with every session because not everything matches. But if I give you another example, if you don't mind, we've got a concept called dismarking to rupture, which means getting in behind the last line, a line of pressure, and then you've got another couple of concepts. You've got collective ones that are, playing that pass through. Penetrating pass, breaking lines. And then we've got another universal concept, which is introducing the concept of a third line pass in the first place, which is a forward pass, basically, a penetrating pass. Well, if your macro principle is working in zone three in the entry phase, and you're trying to get your midfielders to find wingers and strikers in behind that defensive line, attack those indefensible spaces, as it were, well, you can see that dismarking to rupture, scanning, and penetrating passes work as concepts in parts one and two to complement and encourage that macro principle in parts three and four.
Absolutely. Makes total sense. Yeah.
So it's thematic.
Yeah, and if you just focus on part three without actually spending some of those parts one and two stuff, that's when I think it breaks down and coaches get a bit frustrated, don't they? It's like, well, you haven't put the foundations in though. You've not kind of embedded some of that stuff in the first place. Even if you just revisit
Yes.
it in the session itself, right? You haven't got I'm pretty sure the players you've got there, they're all decent players. So it's not like they can't do this stuff. But if you shine a light on it at the start of the session, suddenly when you get to the bit you want to work on, average everyone's a bit sharper and a bit quicker. And now you're playing with a better intensity, better match speed, better outcomes, better understanding, back to the point we had in the
Yep.
first place, yeah, using that same language now. So all the key concepts that you want to get across, I'm going to guess those, you're probably saying the same kind of 20 words, 50 times that
That's
session,
it.
because that's what you want, right? You want that common language, the common themes. And when the kids go home and say to mum and dad or whoever else, what did you do at training last night? They'll talk about that and they'll be using that same language and words as well. And suddenly it's all
Yep.
uniformed and put in the same direction. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Do you know what's really pleasing, Scott, from an ego standpoint, to be honest with you, I don't mind admitting, is when I step into a session that one of my coaches, step into a session of a team that one of my coaches run, and I maybe run a part of it, and at the end of it, I go, "What did we work on today?" And they tell me back the names of the concepts. Now, they haven't learned it from me. I've only had them for 20 minutes. This is the coach that's had them for like 6 months, right? And I'm like, that's blinding, because they're all on the same, everyone in this little group, including the coach, are all on the same page, and that makes his job a thousand times easier.
Well, do you know what, Paddy, like you're spot on, but I would say, and you're right to be proud of that, and because I think that's the essence of coach, to be honest with you. But I think what it does, it may make it easy, but also means the coach can coach, can't he? He can get into the detail and really help the players get better and make the most of the time he's got with the players. And that's the bit that's lovely, isn't it? It's like, look, yeah, I don't know, you maybe you've got them for 90 minutes a week, maybe longer, but however long you've got them for, it's never enough time. And if you can make the most out of that time, that's what's beautiful. And if you've got tools and resources and people around you that can maximize that, I think, if I'm a coach, whether I'm running the show or just supporting another coach, the more we can get the players make the best use of their time, that's brilliant, isn't it? Because you're a really good coach, right? Making the best use of your players' time is the best thing you can possibly do. It's like teaching, isn't it? Like, you don't want a kid in the classroom bored for 55 minutes out of the hour. You want them to lo love
That's
every minute
it.
of it because it's their time, isn't it? And that's what you've enabled by doing what you're doing and all the hard work behind the scenes, so they can maximize their time out there when they've got the players in front of them. And it sounds like it's working.
I hope so, mate. I think so. So.
I'm sure it is. Well, look, I'm not going to let you go. That's quickly speaking about Charlie. Then we can get onto the actual, because all this stuff feeds in nicely to what we're going to speak about in a bit more detail with regards to the concepts and the bits and stuff. But just quickly, then, Charlie, again, I won't go too much, and we won't worry about the dad coachy bit because I'm sure that's another podcast in itself as well. But as I'm just fascinated to know, just really briefly, as an under nines player that Charlie is, what does that look like for him? When's he training? When's he playing? What's the levels like? And how much is he enjoying it?
Mate, America is hardcore. I'm not entirely sure why. I have a theory about it. I think if I had to guess, sorry, your question, 4 times a week he trains and he plays on the weekend. I think if he was less good, that's not the right way of saying it, if he wasn't as good as he is, and I'm not saying he's a world beater or professional, but if he was any worse than he is, my wife and I have talked about this, or if his level falls off in the future, we would probably pull him out, because currently he's at some supplemental sessions as well that his club runs, but he doesn't have to go to all of them. So right now he's mandated twice a week, but he does, in the winter he does Curva. We've got professional clubs near us that come in once a week and run these, what they call a discovery program session. So it's the better players together getting strong coaching. And he trains with another team once a week, because we really love the coach that does it. His coach is great, but the coach that does this team is a positional play guy, right? All his sessions are rondos, positional play games, and that's, got to put my money where my mouth is, right? I
Yeah,
want my boys
exactly.
to,
Gotta go there.
right? I gotta do that. I can't teach him that at home, mate. That's the thing. I could do Curva, I could do cone drills, I could do all this stuff with him at home. I can't work on anything that
Need the
needs more than one
players.
player. Yeah, that's it. So your question was, is he loving it? Yeah, he is. He's my son is. He's my. I love both my children the same, but he is a boy, and he does things that I maybe have. I have more.
Relatability is a bit stronger,
The
which is fair enough.
relatability is stronger, mate. You you succinctly put it there and got me out of jail with my wife when she listens to this.
We can edit the podcast, don't worry, it'll be fine. We'll leave it. I love them both equally, and we'll leave it at that.
and cut.
Yeah.
But he does things that are more of an interest to me, or things that I did myself. Now, I wasn't a very good football player, but I played rugby to a good level. My daughter's an amazing artist. She does the viola. She can paint and draw like you can't believe. She can pick up a tune on a piano. I can't, as I admire and I sit back and love watching that, I can't help her with it. I can't give her advice. I can't anything, right? So I'm a viewer. I'm an observer there. Charlie Boy is an absolute stone cold warrior. He's the smallest kid you've ever seen in your life, but he goes out to bat. And if you want a little story about why I kind of relate with Charlie so much, we were in a tournament in Nashville about 3 months ago, and we played against this really strong team from Nashville in a final. And he was on Charlie. Charlie's a centre back or a six, and this kid was, oh mate, he was unbelievable. He was like the kids that you see on the videos that their parents put the YouTube reels up, so that he was dancing around everyone. And Charlie just took exception. He took exception to this young boy, and he went after him so hard that I shouldn't laugh at this bit, but he caused so much frustration to the kid that the kid started crying and giving out on the field, and his coach pulled him, right? And that's, I'm like, as someone that used to love to win when I had the body and the ability to do it, there's a saying here, mate, they go, game recognizes game, right? And I don't know if that translates to the UK, I'm like, oh, that's my boy. That's my boy, right? That's what he brings. But also on top of that, Scott, he's quite smart. He's fairly cerebral, does very well at school. So he picks up on positional play stuff very well. And actually, we used a video of him last night in my coach education session, because we were working on that macro principle that I talked about attracting play to find the free man in the line. And he did that at his game last weekend. And my wife sent me a video of it. So I was like, all right, that's going straight in. So he received the ball from a goalkeeper. He got some kid flew out of the offense, the pressing line to they jumped out and pressed him. He put his foot on the ball, held it for a second, drew the guy right in, and then just pinged it across to his open center back. Open center back carried up to halfway, mate, but not just broke the line, up to halfway and out.
Yep.
Oh, lovely. And I'm like, that's going in the video. I was like, my
perfect example.
Perfect example. We can do that here. I forgot the rest of your question, mate. So I was fanboying on Charlie.
And so you should watch it. So, and on the bit, I'm going to guess this, but you correct me. But on the whole bit about playing against the other lad that was up front and everything else, that this isn't about trying to make another kid cry. This is about actually, do you know what? Embracing a challenge. For the other kid that struggled in that game, it's probably the best thing he's had probably all season, because, you need that sometimes, don't you? That's how you develop. You know, it's competition for a reason, right? To get you stronger and better. And he's probably done the other kid the biggest favour he could do, because he's obviously a good player himself, you know, and actually he gave him another challenge. I'm going to guess all within the laws of the game, he wasn't kicking the kid around the park and getting himself sent off, Charlie. He was doing all the right things, but doing it with determination and hunger. And, you know, for the boy, it's a bit of a reality check that actually, you know, I'm good, but actually I'm going to face kids that actually want to have that desire to compete and can do their job just as good as I can do mine, and I need to get better still. So that's a win-win for everyone, isn't it? Doesn't always feel like it years old, but that's a win for everyone. And better than him scoring 20 goals in that game and then, you know, and Charlie letting him off and getting bored and thinking, oh, he's too good for me, I'm going to let him have it. They both helped each other there, haven't they? And that's what it should be about, you know. Brilliant. Great story. Thank you, mate. Okay, well, again, I this will be a four-hour podcast if I don't G myself up a little bit. So let's get on to some of the questions.
You're good.
Well, look, hey, can you see that, Paddy? I don't know if you can see that. It's your book, mate.
Yep.
There you go. So, like, and I've gone for that a few times, because I think, again, going back to what we said at the beginning, you know, you threw out some concepts and stuff there back in, you know, I was probably halfway through my coaching journey back in 2020. I've been going for 12 years. Yeah, so-ish. So, like, I'd got to a stage where I was a little bit better than I used to be, but still had a long way to go. And your book came at the right time for me back then. And I certainly took up parts of it, what I was capable of doing then. But I'm still going back to that book now and revisiting and trying to improve and have more detail to what I'm trying to achieve, you know, through my little coaching journey as well. But if you don't mind, Paddy, a bit of background to, you know, the books and what you've done with them and where they got to. And then we'll go a bit more then to the new thing that you've got out now after that, if that's okay. But just the books,
of course,
kind of background, if that's all right.
Yeah, no worries. So the first book I wrote, listen, I'm glad it helped you when you were starting your journey. But when I look back at it now, I wish I'd maybe hung on to it. I mean, no regrets. I wish I'd maybe, because it took me so long to sort of put one together. I was kind of happy with it and I wanted to get rid of it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to publish this on Amazon and see what happens. People still talk about it, and I love that. I love that, but I'm also a little bit inside cringing because I'm on a podcast here, and I talk for a living. I actually don't like attention, believe it or not. I don't. I would rather sit and watch on the outside of everything, and then maybe send you an email and go, "This is what I saw," and whatever. You
No
can't.
chance of
You
that.
can't
Not
do that. No,
we're getting
you
away with that. I'm
can't
not
do
letting
that.
you. Yeah.
Not in this job. You can't do it. But that book, I sometimes cringe when. So my current boss has it, and I think that's actually one of the bases on which he hired me. But I look at it now, and I've evolved past that so much, and maybe it's still technically correct, but there's so much more nuance. I think that's probably what I'm trying to get at, Scott, because like I said, I was not a high level player. I played football every day from when I could walk to when I couldn't walk, basically.
Yeah.
But I was not good. People don't understand here in America, you get like one, they call it recess, one break a day. It's like when I was growing up, we had three. So we'd be out in the field with the ball before school, 10:15 when the bell went, 1 o'clock when the bell went, and maybe another time where we have a halfway break, and then after school. So I might be kicking a ball around 5 times a day, right? So I loved it, and I developed my skill and what skill, inverted commas, whatnot. But I didn't understand tactics or concepts, or and I didn't play at a high level, so I never had that coaching. I didn't understand like channel runs and all these things that are habits for high level players, right? It's just a unconscious habit. So when I put the game model together, it was very much an abstract or isolated. Here are some patterns that I've identified from watching Barcelona for the last 10 years that I like. And that book has helped a lot of people. To this day, mate, I still get little messages on Twitter, excuse me, or someone, I'll bump into someone on a field and I won't know them, but they'll, if we start talking, I introduce myself, they'll say, "Oh, I've got your book, blah, 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 blah. What do you
Brilliant,
think
yeah.
about what's this?" Yeah, what's that? But now, and I'll send it to you, Scott, when I'm done. Now I'm actually. I would like to say finalizing, but we've already discussed it will never be finalized. I'm rebuilding our 11v11 model as well. The club just invested in Y Scout, which I think is now owned by Huddle or the other way around. But I don't know if you're familiar with that tool, Scott, but it's like an analyst tool that you would use to pull down clips from a professional game.
Okay.
And you can search it with fairly broad terms, but you can look exclusively for, I want the last 5 games of Barcelona building at the back, where Ter Stegen touches the ball, and you'll get 150 clips, and then you can screenshot it, or you can download it, and then you can go and draw in it and telestrate it and all these things. So I'm rebuilding our 11v11 model based on using that. And one thing I've noticed, mate, is the nuance, and this is the nuance part. So I might have talked about mechanical mechanisms or very like lineated mechanisms in the book. So A passes to B, B carries. One thing I've noticed as I've coached for longer and been involved with the game, so I worked at FC Cincinnati as well. I was in their analysis department watching thousands of hours of clips, is almost nothing happens in a game. And this is really subtle. And if you played the game for a good level at a good club, you probably notice. If you played the game at a good level for a not great club, you might not, and then everyone underneath that might not. Is that almost nothing happens without the supporting structure. So you can say, circulate and probe the ball all you want. You can say, then switch it to find the free man all you want. But that free man won't ever appear without certain supporting movements from off the ball players. That you won't see because they're not necessarily even in a position to receive the ball. But if you look at the movement of Frankie de Jong, for example, at Barcelona, when they're building at the back, he always does this, or not always, quite often does this, what you might call reverse movement. So he'll go, he might be above, ahead of the ball. And then as the ball is circulated and you find that free centre back, he'll do like a reverse or an opposite movement to, and he'll go and sit right on the shoulder of the striker that may have pressed that player that's carrying the ball now. And he'll pin him. He'll basically hold him there without touching him, obviously, just his very presence. And that player has a decision to make now. And then on the other side of that, sorry, I know I'm doing visuals on a podcast here, so it's not the best. But if you've then got the fullback and the winger that are on the same side, as that centre back that's now carrying. They'll also perform off the ball movements that never stop, right? And they'll readjust them. So it won't just be about width and depth, which is what you get told. It's about relative or specific width and depth relative to the player. So being just wide isn't enough. Being wide, but kind of in the ear of the defender to pull him away. And then what you see what happens is, right, these two pressing players, so it might be a nine and a winger, are about to light up that boy, that guy that's carrying the ball. And then they check their shoulder and they see Frankie de Jong on one shoulder. They see Koundé on the other. And you see them, they run forward 2 or 3 yards. They look and they're like, no, I can't. And they come back and they just walk away. And that centre back now, the pressing players might only be 7 yards ahead of him, but they're not going to press him. They're not going to jump. He'll carry it. He'll carry it all the way up to halfway. And Frankie de Jong and Koundé and then probably Pedri at the 10 are constantly in motion to pull and pin any of the players that might have jumped to press. And then what you might get, Scott, is you might get another player who's not being pinned. He'll go, right, I'm going to have him. And he'll go after him. And Pedri or de Jong, they'll adjust their position again to be diagonally behind that guy or something. And they all know, they're like, if I jump, I'm the one that's broken this press. I'm the one that's messed this all up. So rather than do that and then create numerical superiority behind a line, excuse me, they'll just drop and let the guy carry up. So why am I saying that? It's because the book is very mechanistic, or mechanical rather, probably a better word. What I've learned since is there's games within games within games within games. In every moment of the game, there's off the ball movements that will dictate maybe more than the ball what can happen. And the first game model book doesn't have any of that, really.
you just ruined the whole book now. But to be fair, Paddy, I think I totally get what you're saying. And it's an evolution, right? You've evolved your craft around this, and rightly so. Yeah. And I'm sure you look back in 10 years' time, whatever you were to write now, you'd be like, oh, I can do better. I think it's more deeper than that, more involved. But I don't, what I would say is, please understand from like a consumer point of view, is I might not be ready for the next phase. I might be now, but I might have been back then. And that's what I needed right then. Almost the mechanics, just a structure, just a framework around things, like on which I could build, add, delve deeper, move things around, try things out a little bit. But I think, you know, maybe for some coaches, maybe they need the next one now because actually they're ready for that. But I would still say it has a lot of value, particularly to like less experienced coaches that just have you know, have gone through those first kind of hard yards and looking for like maybe phase two of their development model, in the sense of, right now I can add a bit more detail to what I'm trying to do here. And I think it's still got a place, but noted about the fact that actually there's a bit more ambiguity probably around some of this stuff that maybe comes out always in the book, but it's still a great framework, I think. And you know, and sometimes that functionality on the mechanics side, like, is a good way to start off and understand it a little bit, do you not think, to lay their foundations and watch then to build on?
Yes, I do, mate. And I really appreciate you sort of reining me back in there, because you're right. I mean, it's still valuable to people. It's I'm not being empathetic enough there and looking at it.
You've
from
gone past it, right? You're seeing it
from
5 years later, a bit more experience. You know, you've gone now to another level. It's like, I want to get that in there now. And maybe that's why you are where you are, right, with what you're doing now, because actually, you know, there's, you know, the evolution's taken hold of you. You've got to get it, you've got to share it.
You could be right, mate. And actually, I've been fortunate enough as well. So, I started at grassroots level, like everyone. Well, actually, would you call it grassroots? I started coaching a women's team, really, back in England, back in the day. But I guess that is grassroots, isn't it? But you're right, there's an evolution. And I was lucky enough to be exposed to analytical tools when I worked at FCC, which I've kept with me. Like, if the club didn't pay for it, I would probably pay for it. Because watching a game on a weekend, if you can squeeze two games in, you're lucky. But with a family, a young family, and work, and Charlie playing football 57 times a week, I mean, we don't get to watch as much as we want. Isn't that ironic, mate? Like, being in football, I probably watch less than I did. So
yes, man.
One of the ways I consume it now is through things like Huddle. So Barcelona played at the weekend, and I went through. I'm using some of that game to help rewrite the 11v11 game model now. And I got to watch that game in phases. So I'll select zone one. I'll go, let's see how Barcelona build out. I'll watch the last five games, maybe the last three games, get 150 clips. But you crack through that in about an hour. So you've watched a team build out 150 times an hour, and you start to go, Oh, look what De Jong's doing. De Jong's always, why is De Jong
Yeah.
always there? Because he can't get it there. And you're like, right, he's put, and then you look at the player next to him, and it's this evolution. And I bet, like you say, in 5 years' time now, maybe I'll start seeing it like Neo in the Matrix, right? There'll be ones and zeros dropping down on the
Yeah.
screen, right? But I'm
Yeah.
not there yet.
But also the game changes, right, Paddy? The game
Oh,
evolves, isn't it?
yeah.
You know, so again, you know, it's
Yeah.
because like you've got to keep evolving. So what you've got right now, I'm not saying the game wouldn't apply, but you'd have to adjust things because, you know, 4-4-2 is coming back in fashion a little bit, or you know,
Isn't it?
two
Yeah.
centre forwards. There was no centre forwards 4 years ago. Now people want two. It's like, well, hold on, you know, so that requires different changes from other angles and things, doesn't it? So you
Yeah.
watch the game in 5 years' time and it will look different again with what people are doing, because
100%.
that's the beauty.
100%.
That's the beauty, right?
Remember growing up, mate? I think we're probably similar ages. I might be a bit older than you, but like there, it was always two strikers up front, big lad and one that ran off, wasn't it?
4-4-2,
Always.
exactly that, exactly
Yeah.
that. Yeah, I'm an Arsenal
Yeah.
fan from 80s, 90s. That's how we got our one goal in every game and won 1-0. You know, put it up there and knock it down and grab the
Yeah.
goal and then defend up and
Yeah.
give nothing away.
There you go.
Well, so that was the first book. So what and what's evolved since then then? So obviously the game model was out, and what's gone on since that book?
So we a friend of mine, he used to work for me actually when I was running a club in Ohio. He's a great coach, this guy, and he sees, I don't meet too many people that see, I don't meet too many people at the grassroots level anyway that see the game like I do. And I don't meet too many people in the professional academy setup either. And there's different reasons for that, right? One is at the grassroots level, the coaches maybe aren't that invested. They're just not into it. They may be coaching because their kid plays and it's a part-time thing for them. At the professional level, these guys are worried about results and maybe not, I don't mean to be unfair there, but they one of the priorities might be results and they might go with what is established and known, right? The old-fashioned way of doing it, fitness, strength, height, speed. And you have to really find the right environment that embraces positional play because it is risky at the early ages. It is to train it. I mean, look at you kind of going, I'm going off topic now, but there's something called structured training and tactical periodization, which kind of a part of their a key tenet is that you don't train things in isolation. So you're not working on passing patterns, you're not doing cone drills. And obviously coaches can take cone drills and take passing patterns and get success with them. They can run a session that is neat and tidy. Parents on the sideline can look over and go, cool, that looks good, doesn't it? The player's like, well, I guess we're doing something, A to B to C to D. But you haven't, in my opinion, you haven't really taught anything. And to work on positional play, you have to get messy. Your session will not always look neat and tidy. It will be asymmetrical. There'll be peaks and troughs. There'll be a period of learning and explaining the game, the activity itself. They're like, a what? A neutral? An overload? You know, whereas with a passing pattern, it's just you stand on that cone. Okay, I can do that. My mum can understand that. And you stand on the other cone, or my dad can do that. Like, but you're working with kids that have energy. They receive information in a different way. They're open, complex systems. Nothing's linear. Nothing's like input output. It's you adjust something over here, right? It's like chaos theory. A moth flaps its wings over here, and there's a tornado over in Tokyo, or whatever, right? And that's what training should look like, right? It's how many, I mean, how many times, mate, have you gone into a session and you're like you're smug, you patted yourself on the back before you even do it. You're like, I know what I need to do. I need to just adjust this little thing and this is gonna fly. And then either it flies or it falls off the face of a cliff. And you're like, what has happened there? Because it's not linear. You don't push the red button and get the XYZ output, right? You change something and it can affect a bunch of other things that are connected. So that, in my opinion, the risk factor, right? Playing out the back is a big part of positional play, right? And if you're about results, maybe you don't do it because at least you're not going to give up goals in that area from that play. Ball might come back at you 1,000 miles an hour faster, but people disassociate that, I think. And the other thing is their sessions can look really messy and can be hard to control. And I think the illusion of control is exactly that. It's an illusion. You ain't controlling anything, right? You might constrain it and direct it. You're not controlling it. So I think that's why it's hard. So I met Grant and he embraced that. So we came up with, we were like, well, what do players need to know to be able to play positional play? And that was this common language of concepts, universal collective concepts. And the book was the first iteration. And like many things, I've adapted it, I've added some, I think if I was ever to revisit this in a couple of years, I might change the categorization of some of these things. Some things that are universal for reasons that I understand might appear to be collective to other people. But basically, we wrote this book and people loved it. People loved it so much. Like I don't mean to be braggadocious or whatever, but it took off, Scott. Like it was really just for us two, to be honest. And like everything, we published it and we were going to use it in-house for our club. And it started to fly. I still probably get, if I said I got one or two messages a day on Twitter asking, is the book still available? I don't think I'd be lying.
Yeah.
And
Is that Football Alchemy? Is that one?
that's that one, mate.
The
Yeah.
language and philosophy of positional play.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you have a copy, but we stopped producing it. It was self-published, right? And I just didn't have the time to do it, and Grant didn't want to do it. And I moved the book online and adapted it and expanded it. So we took that book and put it onto an online course, which probably got, I mean, I don't want to say the X amount of times the material, but if I was to say that, if you were to sit down and take notes and reflect and go through the course properly, the full course, I would suggest you're probably looking at about, I would say about 50 hours. If you sit down and take it in, you could obviously click through it and whiz through it just to say you've done it and
Yeah.
get the certificate at the end or whatever it is, you know, but like,
Yeah. If you want to actually learn it, take the learning aboard and yeah, reflect. Yep.
Exactly, Scott. So we did that, and now that's very popular, and people are, it's like, I don't want to sound too grand because it is just football at the end of the day, but some people have had a light switched on for them, and I get, like, really, from the book and from the course, I get really lovely emails, or people reach out and find me at my club, and I'll send an email to my club, or they'll find us on Twitter, and I'm sure Grant gets the same, so I probably only get half of them, he probably gets the other half, and they just love it, and they're like, oh, I didn't know what I didn't know before,
Yeah,
right? I was
exactly.
just doing this. And even if they take some of the stuff and then they go and find more information from somewhere else, or they build it on their own, this book seems to be, the concept seems to be a starting point for thousands of coaches. And I know you can even download this book illegally, like you can find PDFs online. I don't care, whatever, right? So I know how many people bought the book. Who
Yeah.
knows how many X amount of people have got the PDF,
Read it anyway. Yeah.
and read it anyway. And if everyone's being honest and genuine with their feedback, and I assume they are because I don't know them, they reach out to me, not the other way around. That's amazing, mate. Like, we've actually helped coaches go out and help, and then you magnify that by, let's say they've got two teams each and they've got 10 players in each team. One coach has helped 20 kids, and maybe we've sold the book to, I don't know, mate, 5,000, 10,000. I've no idea. I really no idea. That's
Yeah.
amazing. So I'm really delighted with that. And then we took that and put it online and supplemented it with videos and expanded upon the concept. Because obviously, the book gets more expensive due to the weight and color versus black and white. So we couldn't do every, and obviously, you can't put a video in a book. So we couldn't do everything we wanted. So I've taken that now, and I'm happy with the final product. But I'll probably, I'm working, I won't name him on here, but I'm working with a guy that runs the platform that it's on. Great guy. Great coach. He's done all the courses you can name as well. And I'll probably work with him forever now on this. Every time I see a video that better explains something, I'll send it to him. Every time I'm adjust the concept, I'll send it to him, and he'll make those changes, and we'll always improve this course forever and ever and ever. And that's actually why, it's one of the main reasons why it's a finite, it's not like you don't have to log in forever. So I think you've got like 90 days or something to get what you need out of it, which is plenty of time. But then that will shut down and it will absorb the latest update as and when they come. So that's pretty much. Oh, I don't know if you're asking about that. There was another little book I did as well on Espacio de Phase, or the dynamic spaces. I don't know if you talk about that as well,
Yeah.
Scott, or no? Oh,
Well,
okay.
I've seen that one as well, but yeah, more related to the course, but you can mention it as well, please. Yeah.
Oh, well, no, I don't need to get a shout out, but like that book is important to how I coach, and stuff from that book will now be reflected, talking about updating, adapting myself, will now be reflected in the new game model. And actually, I'm kind of wondering how I ever really got by without the concept, and how it applies to embedding certain behaviors in your players related to where they are on the field. So that's all I'll say about that. But it's something I use now in my coaching, and my coaches are going to start getting that in the near future as well.
Brilliant, mate. Brilliant. Look, so I've had the privilege of looking through the online course then, Paddy. And Like the interface that you sent me and I've seen through, like it's lovely, it's so easy and nice, and like, it's a pleasure. I don't read books online usually.
Lovely.
I'm an old school. I've got loads of books in my book cabinet, and I like
Yeah.
podcasts, but I'm not really a screen person. But I genuinely liked going through it. I found it fascinating. I found the fact that, you know, it like there's a lot in there. Like you say, you can spend a lot of time on this, but also you can dip in and out. You can pick things up, get a gist of things, go a
Yep.
bit deeper, scan forward, scan backwards, watch a video. Like it's really well laid out and really user friendly. And I was going to ask that about the fact it just feels live. If I know it is, well, I'm guessing it's quite fresh, but like it does feel live in the sense of actually you can you, like it's a live tool. You can update and change things, can't you? As and when you've
Yep,
already said
that's
you can
right.
do so. It's brilliant. How long has it been available for, and how do people get to it? I mean, obviously I've known it because of speaking to you, but how does everyone else get their hands on this?
Yeah, I think it's been out now for maybe 2 weeks, Scott.
Right.
And the feedback's been great. And it's actually also generated a kind of resurgence in people asking for the book. But unfortunately, the book just isn't available at the moment. I'll tell you something funny as well, going slightly off topic. There's another coach education company called Tovo who are great. I did one of their courses myself when I was a bit younger. And there's a group chat they have, and one of the guys in there reached out to me and he's like, he sent me some information from this group chat. And it's like people were offering to sell the book for, secondhand. I was like, really?
So
I was like, maybe I should bring that back out.
supply and demand, you see, that's what this is. You're
I
just not
guess,
make
mate. I
Was
thought
that
that was
Tovo that
funny.
you said? Tovo.
Tovo, yeah. And I
That's
can't
he's
say
been on the
enough about
podcast. I forget
Tovo.
his name now, the really nice guy that's yeah, Todd
Todd Bean.
Bean. Yeah, got
Yeah.
good guy. Yeah,
Good.
Johan Cruyff's son-in-law, isn't he?
That's it. Good
Yeah,
coach, good platform.
great,
I
do
like
some
them a
great
lot.
work. Yeah, very good. Well, that's a good
They
shout out.
do. I'm sorry, your question. How can I get hold of it? So if you
Yeah,
go to
so
King Knight, sorry, go on.
yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Yeah, how we want, I want people can find it and have a look themselves, you know. So go on, where's the best place to find it?
If you go to kingknighteducation.com and there's a button, I'm just looking at it now because I didn't know myself actually.
We can put the link in the
How good
show
is
notes, so
it?
don't worry too much. We can get the exact
There you
link
go.
in there so they can find it. But
All
King
right,
Knight
and it's under the
Education on the
courses tab.
website, on the
Yeah,
courses
it's under the
tab. Yeah.
courses tab, and there's the youth coach. Oh, mate, there's another book. I forgot we did a youth coaching book as well a couple of years ago. There's the one about a specialty of the phase, which maybe is my personal favorite at the moment. And then you've got the coaching courses, the coaching concepts online as well, so people can have a little mess around and have a look in there.
And on the coaching course one then, Paddy, there's two parts, isn't there? You kind of got the football alchemy bit, and then you've got the theory part, haven't you? Is that right? And how you're applying it? Is that
That's
am I have I
right.
got that right?
Yeah, you have, mate. That's it. And we also offer that bundled with a bit of a discount on it, so you can get both courses together. But as an intro, the intro is in depth, mate. That's a heavy part of the course, and it
Yeah.
basically talks about it. Kind of leads into why the concepts. You don't have to get that if you don't want to. I think if you can afford it for fullness, for completeness, it's good.
It's still value
But
for money, yeah.
it's still value for my. I think so. And you can, but if you can't afford that and the bundle is too much, obviously you can go straight for the actual concepts themselves. And the concepts part of that course has the outline and the explanation of the concepts, and then a video. And some of them have like six videos, some of them have like three, depending on the quality of the video. We wanted to put quality videos in there, not just random videos, but that
Yeah.
might be that's the most what you might call practical or applicable part. So you can take that and literally you could coach with it the next day.
Getcha. Yeah. Fantastic. And but who's it for, would you say? And again, I know I guess it depends on what the coach wants out of their coaching journey and how much effort they're going to be into it. But, you know, if I am coaching an under sevens team on a Sunday and I've got 1 hour a week, you know, has it relevance to me, or do I need to be at a professional academy, you know, with the next, you know, set of international players? You know, what would you say is, you know, where does it best lie?
Yeah, so I'm not really salesy, mate. I get a little bit embarrassed when we talk about stuff like this, but I do appreciate you asking and us giving a shout out. So take my answer with, a grain of salt. I'm not trying to say it's one size fits all, but I feel personally that your U7 team, right up to your U21 academy team, right up to your professional team, could all take elements from this. I would suggest that you might look at it as like one of those nominal distribution curves. So maybe the U7 recreational team takes stuff from the far left, right? They don't take the majority of it. Maybe the professional team takes stuff from the far right. They don't take the majority of it. But I would suggest almost everyone else in between could dip in and out of this and take anything they wanted. And if they're serious about, and why do I say that? Because especially the universal concepts, they are very individualized and what I would describe as tech-tack. Now, you can't play the game without being technical. And at some point, you can't play the game without being tactical. And then these concepts kind of coalesce those two things together. So personally, hand on my heart, Scott, who does this apply to? Well, these concepts form the basis of part one and part two of every session across the club I work at now. If that helps you, if that helps the listeners kind of understand where I'm at. And we go from U5 up to U19.
Oh, well, look, I totally agree. And what I've learned over like the last 12 years of doing this is the better you understand the end picture, the better coach you can be at the early stages as well. Like, I think I'm a much better under fives coach now than I was 10 years ago because I kind of got a better picture of what I think it could look like at 11 aside. So when I'm talking like that, and I don't coach the under fives, I can coach in the under 16s, not, but actually some of the words I use are the same. Some of the principles I use are the same. But if I don't have a good picture of what I think it could look like at 11 aside, recognizing these kids are a long way from like when they get there, it might look a bit different still. So I'm not tying them into too many like fixed concepts, but how can I coach really well at under 5, 6, 7s if I don't have a good idea of what each could look like at under 11. So like I echo what you're saying, but I would say like anyone could jump on this and they're going to learn things. I wouldn't want to go and deliver a lot of this stuff straight away to my under 5s, don't get me wrong, because I don't think they're ready for that. But if I understand it a little bit, then I can plant some of those seeds that's going to help them hopefully maximize their potential, which I think is what you're getting to about the fact it comes through for, you know, for your older age groups, but also down to your younger groups as well. And I'm not surprised. Yeah. Brilliant.
You said something there, Scott, about your understanding of the 11v11 game helps you coach whatever age group you're with underneath that. And I think, mate, that is key, because here in America, and this isn't a criticism, it's more of a cultural observation, right? If you assume my dad, your dad, their dads all played football, well, when you were running around when you were U5, there's a chance that your dad might have jumped in and been the coach for a bit, right? And everyone there, you know, all the family watches the games at the weekend. You've all played. He's grown up playing. He's grown up going to the football with his dad, blah, 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 blah. Well, in America, they don't have that yet.
Yeah.
My son might be the first generation when he turns, well, when he becomes a dad, that have been through a full cycle of it. Like, he was taken to the football by his dad, and now he's taken his son to the football. He's played since he was 5, right? So he could step in and coach at that point, knowing what the 11v11 game is supposed to look like. In America now, I would say culturally, because it's football is culturally young in anything outside of the Hispanic community, I think you have an issue that will rectify itself 100%. And it's no one's fault. It's just a time. It's a history thing.
Yeah.
That you've got coaches that don't know what the 11v11 game looks like. And these might not be professional coaches. These might not be in a travel club environment. I mean, they might be, but they're probably in a recreational or like, oh, guys, we need someone for the U6s. Can someone step up? And then that's where you see these sessions degenerate in from what should be an open, complex environment to a closed, isolated environment, because they don't know what it should look like, so they certainly don't know how to control it or manipulate it.
So they go safe, make sure it looks nice, make sure it looks okay. So people are paying their money. Let's put the badge on and make sure it looks all right. Yeah, it's a great point, Paddy. It's not a criticism. You're 100%. I get that. I think with my sessions, I get more worried if they're not chaotic. I'd like them to have a bit of organisation maybe towards the end a little bit, but certainly I like the beginning bits as chaotic as possible, because I think that's a great start. I want chaos.
Oh,
I want absolute carnage. I want no bibs, tight spaces, you know, loads of kids kicking the ball around, you know, working super hard. And then we calm things down, have a little bit of like what we're doing today. But chaos is great, but I think you have to get the confidence to get there. And I remember when I first started out, you know, I wanted to make sure everything looked nice and everyone was happy and it was all kind of almost slow and safe. And it was the exact opposite of what the the players needed. Exactly. And it showed we went and played matches at the weekend. So, but again, you know, it's no one's fault, is it? It's just part of the learning journey. But the more you can help younger coaches, I don't mean this by age, I'm talking about experiences, it's not an age thing, but younger coaches, you know, get that confidence and understanding earlier. And the work you do does that, I think, the better. And you know, with your books, Paddy, and with the online course, stuff like that. And you never asked for this. This was me coming to you and saying, can we have a chat about this stuff? So, you know, you've not been pushing this. I know I don't get people on the podcast that I don't value their opinion, but also B, I don't, you know, don't chat about work that we're not really buying to myself. And I think if I love it, then I'd want to make sure everyone else knows it's out there, because like you say, if it helps one coach, that could potentially help like 50 kids, you know, because that's who they're gonna touch, you know, over a season or two or three. So mate, you've been a star. I said we'll keep you for an hour. I've been an hour and probably 20 minutes already, so I'm pushing my luck.
That's all right.
We can keep going. We need a part two to this, mate. So I am sorry for going on too long. We got for about three of the 20 questions I had. So that's on me. So apologies. But I don't want to let you go without kind of asking what you're doing now, what your plans are next, kind of thing. And then the final question we'll ask everyone. But let's do your plans next. So what's happening with you? What's the next kind of 5 years looking like?
Well, listen, mate, that's very kind of you. I really, mate, you're genuinely a good guy, and I can see why I can see you being a good coach and giving your time up for kids, and you're properly invested in it, and not everyone is, mate. So I appreciate you having me on. I'll answer your question. I just, one thing you said a second ago, you said about the chaos, you want chaos in your sessions. Well, Mourinho, I don't know the quote, so I'll paraphrase, but basically says those teams that can organise through moments of transition better than the other team statistically will win more games. And I think players need, and that's what a game model does, right? So you can artificially constrain a session, can't you? You can put cones down, go, don't move off that cone. Don't go running. No, don't do that, right? Don't free think or anything. Or you can constrain it through constraints and conditions and rules. And you can only touch it three times, or you can blah, 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 blah. And then what the players do is they take that chaotic moment and they start to manage it under your guidance and under your macro principles and sub principles and sub principles until they get a, I'm not saying it's ever not chaotic, but a less chaotic version that kind of represents or replicates what the game looks like. So I just wanted to touch on that. What I'm doing now is I'm about to start I think it's actually 2026, a tactical periodization course. And two people put me onto that. It's a guy called Brett Utley and Dave Tenney, who work at Austin FC in Texas. I've been interested in tactical periodization for a long time, but I've come to understand that there is very little accurate information out there. So I'm going to the horse's mouth. The guy that invented it, Vitor Friday, has a course out of Portugal. So I'll be starting that next year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Very good.
Right now, I am obsessed with getting the club I'm at, Gold Coast Soccer, to optimize their growth and potential. There's a load of extremely good, dedicated staff, so like management staff, director staff, and coaching staff, and volunteer staff. And I think it's somewhat of a sleeping giant, and the mission now is to wake that up, and I think we've started. That's probably the main focus for me at the moment, apart from just making sure my family are all right, is that, Scott, to be honest with you.
And make sure Charlie doesn't get sent off, he stays on that pitch.
Make sure Charlie, he's picked up two yellows.
He's not to us like his dad.
Might need to rein him in a little bit, yeah.
Mate, well, I'm sure, like, you know, I'm sure you're a piece of the puzzle there. It's not all about you, but you know, the work you're doing at Gold Coast Soccer, I'm sure, is phenomenal. I know they're lucky to have you, mate, and I know that, you know, your passion, your enthusiasm, the things you do comes all from the good place, in the sense of wanting the coaches and the players to have the best experience possible. I think when you come from that position, you know, only good things can happen. So I'm looking forward to hearing how that unfolds. Will you keep us posted and come back on again, maybe not in 4 years' time? Can we speak before the end of the year? Would you do that for us?
Mate, of course I would. Anything you need, mate. Anything
your
for you,
star.
Buddy.
All right, well, last question before you go. If there was one thing you could change about the world of soccer or coaching, just one thing, I can't remember what you said in the first one, but is there anything, you got to pick one, which makes it hard. And I know you're a very positive, optimistic person, so maybe even harder for you. You're not one complaint. But one thing you could change about the world of football or coaching, or, you know, that space.
I might, well... I might go for the one. So I don't know what it's like in Europe at the moment, because I haven't been there for about 12, 13 years, and I know what it's like when I was growing up. But here, Scott, football is, they call it pay to play. Now, you always pay to play wherever you are. You've got to pay £5, £50, whatever it is, £100. Here, I'm thankful to say we're not one of those clubs, but there are clubs that will charge, without a hint of irony, 10 grand a year to play at certain levels. Now, when you're a part of an MLS team, it's like a, Inter Miami, New York Red Bulls, their academies, I believe, I don't want to misspeak, are fully funded, right? As it should be. If you're, but there's also, and they're called MLS Next Academies, but there are also MLS Next Academies that are not affiliated with an MLS team per se. Those ones are private. For those, you can pay, I mean, it's
Astronomical.
toe curling amounts. Imagine you got two kids in it. Imagine, and then the parent has to travel. Parents got a hotel. Parents got this. Parents got that. Food out 3 times a day for 4 days at a tournament in Florida, or whatever. And what that does, Scott, is it removes, and I knew this when I was working at Red Bulls, because Red Bulls had a very high Hispanic area right next to it called Ironbound, which is some of the best players I've ever seen in my life. Still to this day, have come out of that area. But I now work in Houston, which has a very high Hispanic population. And being delicate, but historically, you might say that they're not always in the top socioeconomic earners. And I think what happens is then you get this barrier to entry of playing for these kids. And ironically or conversely, some of these kids, because of the culture, are the best players you'll ever see. But
Absolutely.
they
They
can't
can't
get into
get
a
into it.
structured, organized club. Yeah. They play pickup games, and that might be fine. That might be fine, but very definitely certain doors are closed to them. What is nice to see out here, though, mate, it doesn't happen much anymore, is you see these Hispanic boys and girls playing pickup games. So they'll
Brilliant.
sneak onto the field at the night time when the gates are shut. They'll jump the gates and they'll play. And I'm like, I love that. Have at it. Go on, son. Enjoy that. But
Well,
yeah,
you
I
might
would
not
say
know, Paddy, that I don't know if you know this, but there's a stat, and I won't give the actual because I'm not sure what the numbers are, but roughly, because there's an area in southeast London near where Crystal Palace down that way, where obviously there's not a lot of land, it's London, so there's not a lot of space. They play a lot of cage football, and you've got it's not a particularly affluent area, it's more, socially deprived. It's in it parts of it, not all of it, parts of it, but all these kind of council estate kind of kids that are growing up on these high block flats all go and play down these tight cages, and you've got like 7-year-olds playing like with 19-year-olds all down there kind of in tight spaces playing football, and it's become a proper little hotbed of talent. So look, they did a stat about how many kids have come from there now playing like in the professional clubs, and it's phenomenal because they've actually they've got an edge about them. They've had to graft, they haven't had it easy, they've had to go and find a way to play, and they haven't got nothing to distract them. So but we don't have I don't although football has got expensive over here, and it has increased, and you've got your private academies. I don't think it's as expensive as comparable what we see in the States. So these kids aren't necessarily getting missed out. But it'd be a massive shame if you couldn't take advantage, or these kids don't get opportunities that other kids have got. The fact that actually they've got a lot to offer as well, and in some cases, what they come with is even more powerful than what you might get through like a more
100%.
organized route. Yeah.
Talking about that area near Crystal Palace, are you familiar with Senrab?
No.
So Senrab, that's where I used to play when I was a kid. Now, like I told you before, I wasn't very good, but it was one of those weird ones. So I've just Googled it because I don't want to misspeak. But so my team, or like a year or two younger, or maybe, oh my, 46. Now, yeah, for a year or two younger, it was John Terry, Sol Campbell, Ashley Cole, Jermaine Defoe, Leslie King, Bobby Zamora, and probably a bunch of other players that, aren't as famous, but they had a t and they all came through. I'm looking now. I'm looking down now. There's Lee Bowyer, Alan Kirbishley, like a ton of these people came through this particular club. Isn't it funny how that works sometimes?
That's mad, isn't it? And where's that club?
It's Senrab United. Now, I was born in Custom House, so it was
I
probably
get you.
close enough for my mum and dad to drive me there. They wouldn't have taken me too far. Like, they wouldn't have been that into it. And I was young. I was very young at the point. I was like 7 or 8. But so wherever that is from, it's East London somewhere.
Well, I didn't know that, but it makes sense, doesn't it? But you just don't want to, you know. Look, football's a beautiful game, and part of that is giving opportunities to lots of different people, right? You know, and it shouldn't be the ones who can just afford to have all the one-to-one sessions every week and pay for the, this, it should be your kids that are out there, boys and girls that just love the sport and want to do the best they can. And well, I hope in the States they find a solution to some of that cost. I have heard expensive it is out there, for some, and I get it's a, geographically it's different. There's other things, and there's reasons why they, it won't be the same as what it's like in England. But what you don't want to do is have a model where you're missing out on, kids aren't getting opportunities they could potentially deserve just. Because, just because the structure doesn't allow it, that's created by the adults around it. That's when you've got to have a little
That's right.
rethink. So,
100%,
brilliant,
mate.
mate. You're a star, Paddy. Thank you so much. Again, apologies, I've gone on for longer than I should have done. Let's do a part two. Can we pick up? I don't know, maybe before Christmas or after Christmas, but at
Of
some point we'll
course,
throw you
mate.
around. Is that all
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah,
All right.
definitely.
Well,
Love it.
if not, it'd be the next Oasis gig you're back over for, I'm sure.
Mate, let's do that as well. Let's get Nebworth 2026.
Mate, you've been a star. Thank you so much. Best luck with everything, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you, mate. You too. Have a good one.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.